Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Returning to the show today is virologist Dr. Eric Yeager of the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. He's ready to take your questions about the COVID-19 vaccine and the virus in general. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Usually when Eric is on this program, it is a popular program. So I do advise you call early. 800-348-2551. And we'll check our email bag a couple of times as well. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Yeager and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Dr. Eric Yeager of the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. Dr. Yeager has a PhD in biomedical sciences from the University at Albany. He teaches virology, biology, microbiology, and genetics at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. Dr. Yeager is ready to take your questions about COVID and the COVID-19 vaccine. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org, and we try to get through as many calls and as many emails as we can. We invariably fail, but we do our best. Once again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Yeager, how you doing?
Not bad. Happy Tuesday, Ray.
Great to be back. Nice to have you back indeed, and things are really moving on the vaccination front. More and more people that we know. Many of us have already had at least shot one. Have you guys had your shots over there?
We have. We're starting to roll out more as more vaccine doses become available. The clinics at the college were primarily set up for as a pharmacy for individuals 65 and older. So we tried to get to the communities surrounding the college, particularly those that are underserved. And now with the guidelines being kind of loosened by the governor, we can kind of vaccinate more people.
You know, we've had this discussion in the newsroom, and maybe you could shed some light on this. It seems to me that most people who have the at least the first shot, I don't know too many people who have had both yet, say, oh, yeah, my arm was sore as hell for about 3 days. And, you know, and then there is the occasional person who doesn't have any pain at all and there's no aches at all. Did somebody miss in that case, or did that person actually get the shot?
They got the shot. The side effects, and side effects is kind of a misnomer. The effects you're feeling is your body's response to the vaccine, and it's how it should be responding. So it does vary from person to person. It does differ somewhat perhaps by age or gender. And like you mentioned, like when I got my first shot, my arm felt sore. You know, I couldn't really sleep on it. It was a little stiff, but it lasted about a day. Then it went away. Then the second shot, the side effects, if you will, were a bit more pronounced. I felt, you know, achy, tired. It's kind of sat in my chair. Fortunately, I got on a Friday evening, so I had to kind of take Saturday off and then go back to work as normal on Sunday. So it does vary from person to person. But the important thing is, if you don't experience it, it doesn't mean you got a dummy shot or a placebo or the person that injected you did it incorrectly. You know, all the shots you're giving out are effective. They're working. And it's just, it happens to some people and others it doesn't. So it is kind of a little bit difficult to kind of plan. We try to tell people, you know, you may want to think about what's going to happen that day after your second dose. Maybe you want to take it easy just in case. Have a bottle of Tylenol on hand just in case as well.
The theory that I espoused, and of course I will espouse many a theory that is ridiculous and that I make up on the spot. And I said, well, is it possible? Now, for instance, I had my first shot. I had the Moderna. And nothing. My wife had the same shot. She couldn't lift her arm for 4 days. This is the first shot. And, you know, my theory was, well, maybe I already had the COVID-19 and didn't know it. And I'm not making too many antibodies because I already have them.
So I think what they've actually found is that people that may have been exposed and had maybe confirmed disease, they might feel it a bit more after their first shot. So they are actually getting kind of a booster. So for someone that hasn't been infected, you're seeing that viral protein for the first time. So you and I, when we got our Moderna shots, we hadn't been infected. So we saw for the first time, had a sore arm. We get that second shot. That'll be our second education about the virus. So we might have a slightly greater side effect or response to it.
Interesting.
But individuals that have been previously infected, they might see that shot as their, you know, kind of subsequent exposure, because our immune system is fascinating. It's evolved to have memory. So it remembers what we've been exposed to. So it works better the second or third time.
Amazing. So my theory was not only wrong, it was 180 degrees wrong. And, well, that's about the way things roll here. So let's let's let the expert talk, and we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dave is in Albany. Dave, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. Doctor, I wanted two questions. Taking the shot, I hate needles. Does it hurt? Is it painful with the needle going in your arm, number one? And number two is, if you don't take the shot, is that going to be mandatory someday where everybody's going to have to take it anyway?
Sure. So thanks, Dave. Yeah, not everyone's a fan of needles. It's not, you know, everyone doesn't like getting a needle or a vaccine at the doctor. So I think just try to, like, calm yourself going in. Don't look as the nurse or doctor injects into your arm. It didn't feel any different than a typical shot, to be honest. In terms of being mandatory, it's kind of a wait and see. That's really something that probably local governments and maybe businesses. I know certain schools, like, have vaccine requirements for schools and colleges, certainly. It's a bit premature to kind of predict what governments will do. And I think that a lot of that will be dealing with how long will we be dealing with COVID-19. It's something that we're going to have to deal with on a yearly basis. And then maybe it will be kind of a bit more likely that some kind of mandatory vaccination might be there. But right now, it's a bit too early to tell.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Have we seen any data on which of the three major vaccines are more effective? Now, we've seen certain information out of Europe about blood clots with, I believe, which one was that?
The AstraZeneca one.
AstraZeneca. Yeah. But have we seen effectiveness data in this country?
Sure. So in terms of the efficacy, so when the vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna first came out, people were really focused on the idea of vaccine efficacy. And that's a number that's tied to the clinical trial and how effective it was in those individuals that got the vaccine. What was their rate of disease compared to people that got the placebo? So we're all familiar with the 95 and 94%. And then the Johnson & Johnson came out and we saw the number of 66%, and that caused some people pause. It's like getting a report card, right? You want to get that A+. You don't want that D+ or C-.
So right.
People got focused on the numbers, but in actuality, the real number to focus on is the ability of these vaccines to protect us against severe disease, protect us against hospitalization and death. And all three vaccines currently available in the U.S., the Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, are fantastic. Their rates of protection against severe disease, hospitalization, and death are, you know, greater than 9,500%. So they're all great. So, you know, I know in the clinics right now, you can't really ask for, you know, it's not like going to a restaurant or a bar where you're trying to get your favorite drink.
Right.
You just get the vaccine they give you. But they're all highly effective. So I think we're fortunate, you know, think about a year ago where we were first couple shows about this new virus we didn't know much about. And here we are now talking about three and maybe a fourth or fifth vaccine on the horizon. Vaccinating 4 million people a day, we're in a much better situation.
You know,
so out there, people that haven't gotten one yet, when you get your appointment, whatever vaccine they give you, feel rest assured that it's going to protect you.
It's funny, you know, I was thinking about that before the show started. When you and I started doing these shows, there was a lot of, there was a great preponderance of bad data out there and misinformation about the virus itself.
It really was.
Now there's a great preponderance of misinformation about the vaccine. So here we are, almost full circle. Eric Yeager is with us.
Yeah.
Go ahead, man.
I was in job security.
Well, there you go. Hey, let me ask you a question before we go to the next call. You know, we see the numbers, the age numbers come down now. Now it's 16 in New York starting, I think, today.
Yeah.
Do you, as someone who has been in this field for a long time, have any trepidation about younger people using this vaccine?
So far, no. I think the companies have been very good in setting up studies and being transparent with kind of doing a age de-escalation. So starting with adults first and then working down carefully with the other age groups. And the current data is for 12 to 16, and that data looks good in terms of safety and efficacy. It looks no different than the adult data. So I'm very confident the vaccines are going to work well in that age group, which is important because if we think ahead towards fall and what school is going to look like for K through 12,
yeah.
There's studies starting now for children under you know, kind of infant age to young child. And those, again, they're very careful. They do those last because they want to make sure they have everything set. They understand fully the different dosing regimens to use. So I think these vaccines will prove to be effective in children as well. It'll probably be just a different dose because the physiology is different. Their immune system is slightly underdeveloped. So it'll be a slightly different dose, but I am optimistic that the protection will be just as good as we see in adults.
Dr. Eric Yeager joins us today. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more call before the first break. Teresa in Chatham. Hi, Teresa. You're on.
Hi. With the RNA vaccine, how long does it take the body to actually produce the viral protein from the mRNA instructions?
Great question, Teresa. So just to remind everyone, the way that the mRNA works is we're delivering the blueprint for the viral protein. So it's not the virus. You can't get COVID-19 from the vaccine. It's simply the blueprint to instruct our construction crew inside our cells to make that spike protein to educate our immune system when it actually sees the virus. The mRNA works very quickly. So, you know, I can't maybe predict down to kind of the minutes to hours, but as soon as it gets inside your cell, all the machinery is there to start producing it. So your body's going to start producing that protein. The immune system takes a little bit of time. So it takes, that's why you hear the term, you know, 14 days, you got to wait 14 days between shots before they see antibodies, because it takes a little bit of time for our adaptive immune system, our more specific immune system to gear up. So it takes, again, 10 to 14 days, but it probably works very quickly. The other thing to consider too is the mRNA is very fragile and short-lived. So it's not going to be found in the body probably much past, you know, a few days after the injection.
Teresa, thank you very much for the call. Now, you know, some of these shots, they're spaced out 2-3 weeks. Some of them, like the Moderna that I had, it's a 4-week window between the two shots. Is that too long?
It's not necessarily too long or too short. Really, we're kind of, I don't know if the constraints are the right word to use, but really we kind of rely on that clinical trial to set up the parameters for what's the dose, how many shots, and what's the time frame between those shots. You know, so for Pfizer, it's 21 days for two shots. For Moderna, it's 28 days between the shots. It's just somewhat arbitrary, I suppose. So that's why you can wait a little bit longer. If there was some initial concern the CDC put out, you know, if you can't get that shot, because if you think back to just January and February, where getting a vaccine was akin to winning the lottery, so you weren't sure if you could get that second dose within those 3 or 4 week periods. So there was a little bit of a buffer time between a week or two. But really the timing is just set by that clinical trial. And it's, you know, and different governments have worked differently with those parameters. So in the UK for their AstraZeneca, they found that the longer you wait, the better. So they have maybe a 9 or 12 weeks. So it's a decent amount of time between those doses.
Interesting. Well, let's take a quick break. Dr. Eric Yeager joins us from the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. Back with more of your calls and a check of the email bag in a moment. 800-348-2551. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Yeager joins us from the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. A few emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Barbara in Ulster County. Barbara says, I can't seem to find an answer to this question anywhere. I hope Dr. Yeager can help. All right, it's on you now, Dr. Yeager. Do the studies definitively show that all the vaccines will at least prevent severe illness by all the variants? If not, please explain why we should feel vaccination makes us safe to mingle unmasked if a variant can escape the vaccine. And that's from Barbara in Ulster County.
Yeah, Barbara brings up a great point, the idea about variants. And we've heard a lot about, you know, the UK variant, the South Africa variant. And what these variants are the virus, and thinking back to a year ago when we did our shows, you know, I was like, oh, the virus isn't going to mutate that much. Well, it turns out the virus mutates just enough where it changes parts of that spike protein that might make it bind a little better and transmit a bit better. Yeah. And there's some additional concern that perhaps it might evade some antibody responses. So the initial studies of Pfizer and Moderna, they just looked at the kind of the original strain of the virus. And then Johnson & Johnson, some of the newer vaccines actually have the opportunity to test it against these variants. So there might be a reduction in some of the efficacy. So for the Johnson & Johnson, it dropped to about 57% for that South African variant. So there's some concern that maybe it would be a little less effective. But there's been some new data coming out with Pfizer that it's as effective against the other variants. So we're kind of still collecting that data. Fortunately, Not all variants are predominant in the U.S. yet. They're kind of they're globally, and we're really trying to increase the amount of sequencing so we know these variants exist and we can track them throughout the country. But the one that we worry about, the B117, that's the UK variant, all these vaccines are highly effective against it. So it doesn't seem to have the same concern as that South African variant that might have a slightly better ability to evade those antibody responses. So I think that right now that the answer is that the vaccines look to be protected, but we're still collecting that data. And that's why the companies are kind of looking ahead towards, you know, when we need a booster shot, when we need to reformulate the vaccine, similar to how we reformulate the flu vaccine to deal with these variants.
This one's from Carolyn in Albany. Carolyn says, I've heard that zinc and vitamin D can be effective in reducing the severity of COVID-19 infections. Does this mean that they could either reduce side effects of the vaccine or interfere with the vaccine effectiveness? And that's from Carolyn in Albany.
Yeah, so there's a lot of anecdotal data. You know, different vitamin supplements and dietary supplements, do they work to boost the immune system? Like elderberry was very popular when COVID first came out, and zinc's always been one of those things that has been perhaps a supplement that might boost the immune response. The issue, the trouble here, there's really no clear double-blinded randomized trial to see how well these work. I think what the main recommendations I would say for the vaccine is, you know, to stay hydrated, have a nutritionalist diet, get some rest to make sure that your immune system is functioning optimally as it can, and to avoid anything that's going to stress yourself out. And more importantly, to avoid taking any kind of anti-inflammatory medications before the vaccine. So there's been some kind of calls, you know, by the CDC and some other organizations, like, please don't, you know, they recommend not to take aspirin or Tylenol before the shot, but certainly after.
Really?
And the rationale for that is in past studies looking at other vaccines, large doses of these antipyretics and these pain relievers, they might kind of blunt your immune response just enough that the vaccine may work a little less effective. That's why, and generally they say, you know, take it after it's fine, but not before, because we want to ensure that the vaccine is going to work effectively. Now, how much is too much? It's hard to say, but clearly there are certain drugs for certain populations, like individuals that are, you know, they have a transplant or they're on different immunomodulatory drugs for cancer or other diseases, like autoimmune disorders. Like those types of drugs, they're designed to really make the immune response less to avoid the pathology in the body. So unfortunately, in those cases, the drugs can actually impact the vaccine response. So there's a lot of work that, you know, if you're someone that maybe is taking these drugs or has these conditions, really work hand in hand with your physician to figure out what a good dosing strategy is. And if you could maybe stop using certain drugs for maybe a period of a week or two to get the vaccine. So it's a little complex. I think it's something that we're still learning. The clinicians are still learning about is how to manage different patients with their disorders and the drugs they're taking.
Dr. Eric Yeager joins us today, as he has done several times over this past year. Isn't it amazing that it's now 13 months in and we're still talking about this?
Yeah, it really is. And I think I've almost said every day of the week on my your kind invitation to have me here. I think I said almost every day except Friday.
Oh, really? Okay, this is from Norm.
Yeah,
in Albany.
I think so.
And you know, if you want to come on Food Friday, feel free, man. We'll you know,
yeah, great.
Have some vaccines. We'll make some Coogan. This is from Norm in Albany. Norm says, does the COVID positivity rate correlate with the risk of infection? For example, if the COVID positivity rate is 5%, does that mean that you're likely to encounter a person with COVID out of every 20 people you are near? Do you understand that?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be great to kind of, you know, take that number and directly correlate to your risk. Like if you're in a group of people, like, oh, is there one or two people in this group that could be, but it's a little bit more complicated than that, because the testing is a bit skewed for people that potentially are getting retested for their job or are feeling ill and wanting to get a test. So I think the testing is good because it gives us a snapshot in the community level, how much virus is circulating. But again, it doesn't capture everyone, because those are people that, you know, got a test because they felt symptomatic or they had to get a test for work or school. But we know that there's a number of individuals that are asymptomatic that could be carrying. So I think that's the one concern. And that's why testing has been kind of a challenge, but also important that we keep needing to do that. Again, Dr. Fauci and the CDC have been telling us, you know, even though the vaccines are here and we're in a much better place than where we were months ago, but we still have to kind of stay vigilant and continue with the testing, continue with the mask wearing and distancing until we get towards that herd immunity level.
Dr. Eric Yeager joins us, and let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551, Jim in Matamoros. Jim.
in general, how long after having the SARS-2 will the ELISA test show a positive reaction?
Yeah, so if you were infected with the virus, and most people will develop an antibody response. So the ELISA, Jim mentioned, is a serological test that can detect the presence of virus-specific antibodies. So if you've been infected, serology is one way. The ELISA is one way to show, like, oh, maybe you didn't know you had it months ago, or you're looking to see if you have antibodies. It depends a little bit of natural infection. This has been kind of the one issue when we compare natural infection versus vaccine immunity, is that some people have very strong antibody responses and they're protected. Other people, if they have a very mild case of disease, they might have a very minor antibody response that quickly wanes. The same is true for the vaccine. If you're vaccinated, your body makes antibodies, and you can find those antibodies using the same serological test.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for the call. And now we go to Clifton Park. Eric, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, gentlemen. My question is, I had the first shot of Moderna, and I have an underlying diagnosis of fibromyalgia, and the symptoms of that have exploded to the point of just barely being able to move through the day. And I'm just curious if it's advisable to get the second one.
Yeah, so the effect that you feel from the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine is because they add in what's called an adjuvant. So it's meant to purposely cause kind of some inflammation or tickle your immune system so that you get a better immune response. Because some vaccines need that to get better protection. And I think, unfortunately, in some cases, that can maybe exacerbate certain conditions, like, unfortunately, your fibromyalgia. Probably the inflammation because of the vaccine just kind of exacerbated it. There isn't any counterindication to get the second dose. That would only be if it was something that was, you know, debilitating, or definitely if you had a severe allergic reaction or anaphylaxis to that second shot. So it is highly recommended. We know that you need two shots to get the full protective effect. And again, kind of weighing the risks and the balance, the risks and benefits of vaccination. If you can take that second shot, you know, it may not be pleasant. Hopefully that the exacerbation of your symptoms is short-lived, but the benefit is you would be protected against, disease, COVID-19, that could be severe and cause hospitalization.
Eric, thanks a lot. I had heard that somewhere around 80% is the effective rate after the first shot, a couple of weeks after that first shot.
Yeah, there's a lot of data that was being collected about, you know, what is the protection rate after a first shot? And again, if you think about when we had these trials back in the summer, you know, we had 30,000 people. Compared to where we are now, we have, you know, millions of people vaccinated. So the more people get vaccinated, the more data we can collect and can get more understanding for, you know, how protective is that first shot.
Yeah.
Now, that protective rate of 80% is not to say that we should just, you know, don't worry about getting that second shot, you'll be fine.
Right.
It's just to give people a bit of relief, if you will, that after getting that first shot, your risk of disease has been lessened significantly. And more so when you get the second shot. So I think it's just important that as we start to roll out, because right now I think the numbers I see is that a large number of the population, there's about 32% received one dose. So that's, you know, a large number of people that have greater protection than they had the day before because they didn't have the vaccine. So I think it's good to know how protection is between the first shot, the second shot, and then the data that we're still collecting is how long is this protection going to last? And just recently they extended that out to 6 months. And I think, well, that'll continue to kind of build out as we continue to collect data from that trial that both companies had started. We get a better sense for how durable these vaccines are.
Dr. Eric Yeager is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Brian is in Shelburne Falls. Hello, Brian, you're on.
Hello, Ray. Ray, thank you for everything you do at the station.
Thank you.
Glad you're there, buddy.
Appreciate it.
And Dr. Yeager, I'm so glad to have a doctor of pharmacy, because you guys know so much more than us regular people know you know. That being said, and I'm glad I came in right after this last call, I have a diagnosis of functional neutropenia, low white blood count, and it probably goes back in utero. I know in your bio that you've studied genetics, hence epigenetics. So it probably goes back to in utero because I had the triad of eczema, allergies, and asthma when I was born, and then other things after. I'm 71 now, and I haven't had the shot yet, but I have not had good results with other shots. I mean, one time I almost had to be hospitalized because I had a big red line going up my arm. I'm wondering from this perspective, and maybe you can explain it, functional neutropenia. I know the risk reward, but should I get that shot?
Sure. Thanks, Brian. So I should preface too that my PhD is in immunology, so I'm not a pharmacist like my fine colleagues at the college. But I can certainly answer your question. I can certainly answer your question still. And then first off, yeah, I agree. Your first comment raised great, so I'm glad we have them. neutropenia. So what neutropenia is a reduction in a particular white blood cell called a neutrophil. And a neutrophil is kind of that first responder. So it's a very important white blood cell. Whenever we get an infection, either bacterial or viral, it's the first cell that's attracted. And they're usually high to a pretty high number in our blood system. So they're very important for that initial response, and they do help in some cases bridge into that more specific adaptive response that I mentioned. So when we talk about vaccinations, we're trying to elicit cells specific for, again, flu if we're vaccinated against the flu, SARS-CoV-2 if we're vaccinated against SARS-CoV-2. So with the effects that you've had, I think definitely you would want to consult with your clinician. Is, you know, these are those I've experienced in the past. You know, certainly the real big kind of the big thing they worry about is allergic responses. So where something that reached the level of anaphylaxis that was, you know, very like it happened within 15 to 30 minutes, and they had to give you some kind of medications to lower that allergic response. If it hasn't reached that level, according to your clinician, then you should be able to get the vaccine. And again, it's kind of, you'll have to see how that first dose goes. You've mentioned kind of effects to the other vaccines, and it can be a little tricky to figure out, why did you respond that way? Was there something in the vaccine? Now, other vaccines have potentially latex or eggs as part of the manufacturing process. And you've probably gotten, you know, the information sheet before you get your flu vaccine. It indicates all the things that are in there, and you have to indicate, do you have allergies to latex or eggs, for example. These vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna, the main culprit, they think, is polyethylene glycol, one of the components of the droplet that encases the mRNA. Some people seem to respond or react to that component. So if you don't have a history of responding to that, you know, perhaps you're okay. But really, it's going to have to be, you know, kind of risk versus benefit. And again, you know, COVID-19 in certain cases, a very severe disease. You know, maybe some of your underlying conditions might make you more prone to severe disease. So then it's, you know, talking to your clinician, hey, should I get this shot? Because I really, you know, want to make sure I'm protected against the more severe outcome. Hope that helps.
Thank you, doctor. Yeah, thank you, doctor.
Well,
I actually did have COVID before it was COVID back in December of 2019, and I survived that. But I thank you for your advice, and Ray, thanks again.
Hey, man, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Yeager joins us. And Nancy is in Rhinebeck. Hello there, Nancy.
Hello.
Oh, Nancy. Hello, Nancy.
Oh.
Are you there?
Oh, hi, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
I'm here.
We've been waiting for you. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for having the show. I really enjoy it. Every afternoon I listen to Ray.
Appreciate it.
Anyway, my grandson, I know you touched on this a little bit before, but my teenagers... My grandson, Michael, is 13, and I'm just wondering when his age level will be able to get the vaccine, and will it be two vaccines? Like, I had the Pfizer in the mid-January, and then I had the booster shot February 3rd. But I'm just wondering, will it be the same for his age level?
Yeah, great question. So the age group, the teenage age group, the studies that are ongoing and have been, the data so far looks very good. I anticipate the vaccine for teenagers may come out kind of in the summer, in its summer months, right before school starts. Younger than that might take a little bit of time, but the data so far has been very encouraging. They seem to be as safe, as effective as the adult vaccine, and I anticipate it'll be the same dosing scheme. The dose use might be different, but it still will probably be the 21 days for the Pfizer and the 28 days for Moderna.
All right.
And it's important because, you know, we're learning about what age groups are kind of curing the infection. Right now it's 18 to 29 year olds. We do worry about, you know, could some schools, if these variants come up, that might spread a little bit differently in schools. So it's important to get the younger individuals vaccinated to get us closer to herd immunity.
Dr. Eric Yeager joins us. And before we take our next break, this email from Lori. Lori says, I'm getting my second shot of Moderna tomorrow. I'm told the side effects from the second shot can be rough. Better if I don't take Tylenol, et cetera, if I get a high fever? And that's from Lori.
Yeah, so the for reasons that aren't entirely quite clear, some individuals experience the effects after the second shot a bit more severely. You know, it's not everyone. You might get to, my parents got their second shot. My dad felt nothing. My mother was in you know, bed for the day, felt really kind of achy and fatigued. Again, you can take antipyretics and pain relievers after the shot, kind of as you feel up to it.
Okay. Let's take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. It's Dr. Eric Yeager from the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Yeager joins us for the 37th time in the last year, but damn it, we'll get through this thing. This email from Holly in Charlemont. Holly says, I'm a contact tracer and seeing increasing questions about the vaccine for folks who have had COVID. Can you get vaccinated after you finish isolation, and should you? And then number two, if you get your first shot and then get COVID before your second shot, how does that affect getting the second shot? We don't have any guidance yet from the CDC, and I'm wondering what you're hearing, and that's from Holly.
Yeah, so there are data that's kind of in guidelines coming out about that as we get more individuals vaccinated, kind of adjusting quarantine. So I know it's quite Holly's question, but in terms of the idea of contact tracing, one of the questions now she probably asks an individual is, are you vaccinated? Because that might change how you deal with quarantines. If a person's been fully vaccinated, they don't need to necessarily quarantine unless they have symptoms. For when to get the shot after COVID, to typically ask you to wait 4 weeks after your initial diagnosis or positive test to wait before you get your first shot. There have been cases where people have gotten COVID after their first shot because, as I mentioned, your adaptive response, that more specific response, takes a little bit of time to warm up. It takes about, you know, 10 to 14 days. So in that period, at that warm-up period, you could get exposed to COVID and unfortunately get ill from it. In terms of should you get a vaccine if you've been infected? Definitely. It's recommended that all people get the vaccine. It is going to boost your immune response. It's going to get you to that level of protection that we're seeing in these clinical trials. In terms of when to get it after your second dose, I believe the kind of the guidelines now are, I think it's 14 days after, you know, your symptoms resolve. So there's right now no indication to say don't get vaccinated. Certainly, if you have COVID, you want to wait till you clear those symptoms. And again, that 4 week period before you get your first shot.
Dr. Eric Yeager is here, and 800-348-2551 is the number. Jill is in Albany. Hello, Jill.
Hello.
You're on.
I have a question regarding people who have been vaccinated getting together. I have a couple of very, very close friends, practically family, who have both had the shot, both shots, long past the 2 weeks after, but they are still in quarantine isolation. They are not sure about the variant. At least I know that's one of the reasons that they're doing this. But they won't get together with anyone, even if they have had the shot or not. Now, they said they're following Dr. Fauci to the letter. But I have heard that two households who have been vaccinated can convene, unmask, hug each other. And I just want to make sure that, are they right, or am I
right?
Am I off base?
Yeah,
we got you there. Dr. Yeager.
Yeah, sure. No, thanks, Jill. Yeah, it's I mean, kind of where we are now in this timeline, like, you know, we've thought about like hugging and getting together as this extreme risk activity, and every you know, kind of going to the store, getting a cup of coffee, all this risk analysis is occurring, and now you're vaccinated and all that's removed, and it seems kind of odd, right? So, Jill, you're right in that the CDC guidelines are for two individuals that have been fully vaccinated. So it's not after their one shot with Pfizer, Moderna, it's after two full shots, 14 days out from that second shot, and then a Johnson & Johnson 14 days out. They can get together, and they can get together if they prefer without wearing masks, because the thought there is the data suggests that they're highly protected and the risk of transmitting the virus from person to person in that situation is quite low. Now, they can also get
That's
together
the other
with
reason
unvaccinated.
They gave for isolating.
Yep.
They didn't want to transmit it, even though everybody in the room would have had the vaccination.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right. And it's and people ask that, well, I have a vaccine. Why do I have to wear a mask? And, you know, we're not at the point yet where we can say conclusively that if you're vaccinated, there's no, you know, the risk is zero. There's a, it's greatly reduced, but there is a chance perhaps that you could, you know, catch the virus. It might replicate just enough and you could pass it to someone. Again, the risk is low, but we can't say it's zero. So some people are, you know, very hesitant to say, well, I don't want to completely put anyone at risk. So they can continue to wear that mask. Individuals that are fully vaccinated, they can get together with unvaccinated people if that unvaccinated individual is low risk. So if it's someone that doesn't have a pre-existing health condition or is a certain age, again, the risk is considered low. Again, not zero, it's always low. So it's still in this area of risk yeah. management. How comfortable do the people in that room feel? And I think for your friends, you know, you
yeah,
don't
want to
be that
they
person.
They don't even
someone
want to
you
get
love
together
sick.
With other people who are vaccinated.
Huh. Well, maybe they're just antisocial. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's a good excuse.
Oh, no. This couple, no yeah. way.
All right, fair
they're
enough.
They're very, yeah. very social.
Okay. Yeah, no, I do think that's highlight, you know, there are people that will even get vaccinated and the data supports that they'll be safe. But I think it's going to take, you know, we're a year past all the fear we had last year, but that's going to take some time to get back to feeling normal. So no matter if, you know, stores and restaurants and theaters open, I think it's going to take people time to feel comfortable doing things that they did pre-COVID. And it's going to just take some time. But your friends, I think, be patient with them. Hopefully they'll feel a bit safer. Right now, the variants, you know, the vaccines protect against the 117 that seems to be a bit more predominant in the U.S. We still have to wait and see what the vaccines will do in terms of other variants that might come down the road. But right now, we're in a good spot with the vaccines. As more people continue to get vaccinated, hopefully the rates will come down and it becomes even more safer.
When this is all behind us, it occurs to me that this country is going to be having one hell of a party. And
oh, yeah.
It's going to be like the roaring 20s. I think that we will have to really have extra, you know, cops on the beat just to keep the parties down in the middle of the night, because I think there are a lot of people who have been pent up and they're ready for a little relaxation.
Yeah. Yeah, we're there. I think it's understandable. You know, but we have to tell people we're not quite there yet. So please, you know, we can see that goal line. It's very close. So just kind of be smart. Continue to follow the guidelines and listen to Dr. Fauci. And, you know, like Jill here, if you don't feel comfortable, you know, wear the mask and don't ostracize your friend and don't pick on them. If it's again, they feel comfortable with that, let them wear it.
But in your mind, the goal line is in sight.
I think, you know, we're getting close. It's a bit of a race now between getting enough people vaccinated and the variants. And I do, you know, I've been listening to a couple of talks and I'm like, why do scientists have to be so so pessimistic? You know, we want to kind of mix the good news and the bad. I think, you know, where we are a year ago, vastly improved. We have, you know, three vaccines, a fourth potentially on the way, protecting people on a daily basis, 4 million people protected. We're in a much better position. Those variants are a concern and we are worried because every time someone gets infected, there's a chance that a new variant can come up. And that variant might impact the vaccine. So we have that hesitation. But again, if we continue to get vaccinated and follow safety precautions, we'll be even a better space a month and 2 months down the road. But there's still a lot of work to be done. There's still people that are a bit, you know, kind of on the fence about vaccines. So that's kind of the next stage is to convince some of those individuals that the vaccine is safe and effective and worth getting.
All right, Dr. Eric Yeager joins us. Let's go to Valerie in Poughkeepsie. Valerie, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. In 2008, I had a pretty serious case of Guillain-Barré syndrome, and I'm wondering what the incidence of that occurring after the shot and whether, you know, people who have had that are, you know, being recommended to take the shots.
Sure. So thanks, Valerie. So GBS is kind of this thing that can occur with vaccination and also viral infection. It's this kind of unforeseen temporary paralysis and very frightening, of course. The rates of GBS with this vaccine appear no different than other vaccines. I mean, certainly, you know, talking to your clinician, they might say, you know, kind of consider that as part of the thought process of getting the vaccine. But right now, there hasn't been any increased incidence of this with any of the three COVID vaccines, to my knowledge.
Are they seeing it at all? I mean, is it occurring?
I haven't seen any reports of that. I've seen some cases, you know, the anaphylaxis has kind of loomed large, the clots that Ray mentioned with the AstraZeneca vaccine in Europe, but I haven't seen any reports of incidence of GBS. I think they mentioned that just because it has been seen on occasion with other vaccines. Again, reasons why they see it with vaccines and viral infections is really unclear. It's a disease that they have no known etiology. It just happens in some people. So they don't know if it's genetic, if it's something that they've been exposed to at the same time as the vaccine. But I haven't seen anything in any of the reports, any of the medical journals that suggests that there is a increase in GBS incidences of any of these vaccines.
Valerie, thanks a lot for the call. Carrie is in Pittsfield. Carrie, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I received the Pfizer vaccine. I got my second shot the end of February. And every now and then, I get a slight sensation in my arm where the shot was given and how... I want to know if that's normal, if it's something I should be concerned about.
So the idea of the effects, you probably felt after your first shot, your arm was sore, and then maybe after a second shot, sore again, maybe a little bit more so, and maybe some systemic effects like, you know, headache or fever, aches and pains. In terms of feeling the effects kind of, you know, weeks after that, looking at some of the data that's been collected. So with these vaccines, the CDC and some organizations are doing a large amount of collection of safety data, right? Because they had the 30,000 people in the clinical trials. Now we're giving it to millions. We want to make sure that we know the vaccines are safe. So when I got my vaccine, and I'm not sure, Ray, if you got this as well, but there's a program called VSafe. So they have you go on a website and you sign up, and the CDC sends you a text message for the first week every day or so just to indicate what effects you've had. And right now, that data that's out there supports that what was seen in the clinical trial is pretty much mirrored in the population. In terms of feeling kind of this phantom pain after the vaccine, I don't think that's something that's considered a common occurrence. As long as it doesn't hopefully cause any discomfort or any stress, hopefully it's something that just goes away. Maybe you're thinking about the shot. I don't. But it definitely isn't something I haven't seen reported.
Right. It is like a ghost of a feeling. And there's no redness, swelling, or anything.
Okay,
it's just
good.
That slight, that's where I got the shot. So I was just wondering if I need to be concerned about that.
I don't know. And any no loss of function or anything, your arm works hopefully fine.
No.
No?
Yeah. No worries about that. I think most effects, when people ask, you ever a question I get from people about the vaccine as well, I hesitate to take because they don't know the long-term effects yet.
Yeah.
And well, fair enough, the vaccines have only been out a few months, but most of the effects that happen with vaccine historically occur within the first few weeks, maybe a month or so. The long-term effects, there really hasn't been any real evidence of that. So hopefully there's something that's just, maybe you're thinking about it. We're still in the middle of a pandemic and vaccines are on the news 24/7.
Well, you got
maybe
that
just
right.
Brings it to mind.
Yes, sir.
And so hopefully it's something that you know, kind of resolves itself, Carrie.
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. Now we go to, line number 8. And Sapna in Wallkill, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So we are a family of four, and with the vaccines opening up to 16 and over, you know, we're hoping to soon get into the point where 3 out of the 4 members of our family is going to be vaccinated, you know, except for my daughter who's going to be under 16. And there's going to be lots of other families in the community in a similar situation with all, you know, one kid being not vaccinated but in not a high-risk group. They're young, healthy. Can these kids now start some level of socializing because all the adults in the at-risk population is vaccinated?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's something that's probably going to happen in a common occurrence, right? There's families of different age groups, and we haven't gotten to below the 16 age yet. So I think I would probably refer to those guidelines the CDC has. It's really they're looking at, you know, one household interacting with a second household. So they're not kind of recommending these large kind of block parties or large graduation events. So really it's, you know, if a family has, you know, most of that family's been vaccinated and their daughter is not high risk, you get together with your family and your daughter's not high risk. I mean, that's probably safe to do in that setting. And in terms of what that means kind of moving forward, you know, in a school setting, we're still wearing masks and distancing to keep those kids that aren't vaccinated safe. And hopefully they'll eventually be able to bring that vaccine lower, maybe in the summer, early fall, so your daughter can get her vaccine. So I really would just kind of would err on the side of caution and kind of get together on a smaller scale.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Now we'll go to, is it Klaus in Rosendale?
Yes.
You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. So Dr. Yeager, so I had the second Moderna vaccine on February 6th. And just this past week, I was tested positive for COVID. And my wife at the same time was tested positive as well. So I'm actually outside the ER now. She's not doing well. But how much longer do I need to quarantine? And do you think maybe I was asymptomatic and gave it to her after second 6 weeks from the vaccine?
Sure. So the vaccine, so there's two things. So with your COVID test, do you know if it was a PCR-based or antigen-based test?
For myself, it was antigen-based.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the vaccines, they're unfortunately not 100%. So there is some individuals that do not mount a strong enough immune response to be fully protected. So they could become infected with SARS-CoV-2, and they could potentially spread it to someone. You know, did you contract it and asymptomatically give it to your wife? It's hard to say because there's so many variables. It depends if she was interacting with anyone else in outside the household.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. The day she felt symptoms, coughing and really bad, I had a slight runny nose. So we kind of had symptoms at the same day.
Yeah.
So it was a little hard.
I'm sorry to hear that, and I wish her a quick and speedy recovery, and I hope you're doing well as well. It just shows that, you know, with the vaccines, they have a high efficacy, but there's some people where it doesn't work fully. So, and hopefully what that does is the vaccine may not prevent infection completely, but in your case, you know, it prevented severe disease. Now, is your wife vaccinated?
No, she wasn't yet.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. So in that case, you know, when people that are vaccinated, you might still get it, but hopefully it reduces the severity. You know, it's hard to say, you know, hopefully it gives you some peace of mind. I mean, the virus is easy to transmit now, and you can get it from a variety of individuals, unfortunately. So it may have been you or maybe some other person she interacted with.
So
your level of your period of quarantine is going to be the typical, 14 days likely or 10 days on the lower end. So it'll be the mandatory isolation or quarantine that's been set by the CDC, even though you're vaccinated because you did develop disease.
Well, Klaus, we'll leave it there. And thank you very much for calling. Dr. Yeager, you've done it again, sir. And I got to be honest with you. We have so many callers left on the line, and I have about 25 emails here. So we'll probably have to do this at least one more time. That okay with you?
I'm happy to come back, Ray. I enjoy helping share my information and expertise and talking with you.
Great job, man. Thanks for being here. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service at installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. State Street Fruit Store, Deli Wines and Spirits, downtown Northampton. A locally owned grocery and food specialty store. In-store home delivery and curbside pickup, 413-584-2301. StateStreetFruit.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management for trade shows, museum exhibits, special events, and custom interiors, your partner for a custom experience. EmpireExhibits.com. Once again, thanks to the great Eric Yeager for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Once again, I do apologize if we didn't get to your call or your email. I think that we will have Eric back before this whole thing is behind us. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jayshree Sukram took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow! Okay, maybe you're a little sore from the shot. We'll do some physical therapy with Matthew Goodemo tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for books.